Hello and welcome to the Co-opticast, episode 87, Monday, May 14th. I'm your host, Locke, the wizard with the longest sleeves. Joining me today are my faithful friends, Mike, the barbarian, who solves all problems with his fists. We have Jason, the kick-ass monk, master of the sword chucks. And bringing up the rear, Nick, the witch doctor, who summons a legion of frogs who can shoot scorpions out of their mouth to do his bidding. How's it going, guys?
I'm wishing it was tomorrow night, like, a lot.
I like it better that Nick is the wick.
The wick doctor. It's a
the
new
wick
class,
doctor.
Yeah, if it's a male, is it still a witch doctor if it's a male, or is it a warlock doctor? We'll never know for another, like, what, 6 hours? 4 hours. Anyways, as you can tell, we're all excited for Diablo, but we got some other stuff to talk about. We're going to go through the games we've been playing, some headlines, and then we have a wicked feature on some action RPGs. But let's get right to it, guys. And it looks like everyone but me has been playing. Did I miss the boat on Torchlight 2?
Yes, actually you did.
Yeah.
Okay, someone tell me about Torchlight 2, because I have no idea what's going on.
It's really good.
Yeah?
It's better than Torchlight.
Oh, you don't say.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I guess I'll go first. We all got beta invites to Torchlight 2, and so we've been playing a bunch of that, and it's buttery smooth, and it controls well, and it's a click fest and an action RPG like the original one was. Basically, but they've refined everything a lot. The UI is a lot better, and I don't know how to describe it. It's fucking Torchlight again, except they have co-op now.
The way I think that can describe it is if Diablo 3 comes out tomorrow and they changed up, and we've talked a lot about some of the changes they've done with that system and the skills.
Yeah.
For people who are looking more for like what Diablo 2 was and like more Diablo 2 but refined, that's like what Torchlight 2 is, because it uses a lot of those old like skill trees, and you can really kind of customize and you know, tweak your character. That a lot of those features have been taken out of Diablo 3 to make it more streamlined kind of process. So I don't know. There's room in the world for both, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, the one thing about the Torchlight is, like, the world's a little less serious. Like, it kind of, you know...
There's
like
a Goonies reference, man.
Well, yeah. Like, Diablo is, like, it's got, like, the really, really strong lore behind it, and, evil is coming.
It takes itself really seriously.
Right? It's really serious. Where, like, Torchlight, and Torchlight 2 especially, it's a lot more lighthearted. The characters have, you know, a little bit of a comedic side. Even like the art style and stuff, you know, it kind of has...
The character animations on the Berserker are really humorous, I found.
Yeah. You know, like the pet system, you have some like really goofy pets and stuff you can have, like the ferret, the papillon,
Or, you know, you feed your pet fish to turn it into monsters, which
right.
is completely
yes.
unexplained. It just, you just do it.
It's like, yeah, why not?
Yeah,
exactly.
But yeah. I like the classes in Torchlight 2, I think, a little bit better, just because, I don't know, it feels like there's more variety to them. Like, they're just...
Well, what classes are available in the beta right now?
I guess it's
the,
all
the Ember Mage, the Engineer, the Berserker, and the Outlander.
Yeah.
So, the four, okay.
Yeah.
Wicked.
They're all... Some of them are basically, like, rough analogs to the original. Like, the Ember Mage is basically, like, the Alchemist from the original, except has a little bit more in tune with like your Diablo 2 sorceress.
Yeah, you know, but he's also he's very good at like cause that was the one I played a bunch of, and he's very good with the weapons and stuff too. Like, you don't have to just sit back there. They're very balanced. Like, you know, like a lot of times, like in those games, like if you pick a class, you're stuck as a ranged, or you know, you're stuck just casting magic and stuff, and the other things are secondary. And I didn't feel like that was the case with him. Like, there was a lot of skills in like the skill tree that let you work on your melee stuff and things like that.
But there are other things that help feed, like, so if Diablo 3 is like the, you know, this is your like WoW, like, you know, this is what this class can do, and there's you know, maybe this much variance in between what they can actually do in the end. Torchlight 2 is very much the same as the original Torchlight, where if you really want to build your character in a profoundly stupid way, the game will let you. And you can you could take an Ember Mage and make him a close range melee fighter. And the one of the ways they get around that is that a lot of the items that are like cross class, they'll say you can be level 10 to equip this, but if your dexterity is 30, you can equip this whenever your dexterity is 30. So, you know, the Berserker is going to have that right out the gate, and the Ember Mage might not have that, you know, for quite a while. So they can equip some of the weird gear like that if they want to. I think it's a pretty cool system.
The nice thing, right, too, so I played with Tally on, I guess it was Friday night. We actually, we attempted to stream the game. So it was the first time streaming something through Twitch TV. Mm-hmm. Took a little bit to get that set up. But that went pretty well. We had about 20, 25 people watching at any time, which was cool.
Sweet.
But one of the things I really liked was, like, from the co-op perspective, there seems to be skills and things for each class that really help out in co-op. Like, she was the engineer, and the engineer has a little, like, heal bot that can follow around, and do some things there. And things like how the item drops work. Everybody basically gets their own copies of items or whatever to pick up.
Nice.
And things like that. So it just, you can see that they paid attention to the detail for co-op stuff, which is good. It's not just four people having, you know, happen to be playing together. You know, like, there are reasons to do certain things and stuff like that, which is always good.
Right. Cool.
And how did you get into the beta? Just by pre-ordering?
No, was it open? We got keys from Runic.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha, so. Gotcha. Okay. Sweet.
And the key specifically said no Canadians allowed, so...
Well...
It didn't say no Canadians. It said no Loch Vincent.
Oh, okay.
It was a bit awkward. Well,
you know what? I was busy playing such hits as Orion Dino Beatdown, so don't even worry about it. Okay, taking one for the team.
We'll talk a bit more about Torchlight 2 later in the podcast. I played, just to round things out, a lot more Azura's Wrath, and that game is incredible.
Yeah.
And I also played through the first episode of Telltale's Walking Dead adventure game, nice. Which is easily the best thing I've seen come out of Telltale. Like,
whoa.
I'm a huge Monkey Island fan, I'm a huge Sam and Max fan, but I think this is the realization of what they're trying to do with Jurassic Park. And they're making a adventure game that has action elements, but the adventure game is still in it.
Yeah, it's definitely the adventure game for the modern era. It's like what Heavy Rain was trying to do without emotional... it has a lot of emotional stuff to it, but that other psycho, whatever you want to call it, kind of stuff that...
I think what I liked most about it was that it takes your... Like, it takes almost a Mass Effect-like story structure in that there are, you know, plot beats that you can alter the course of the episode, and then your decisions will carry through to the next one.
Yeah.
Cool. Which was pretty cool. And the other thing is that rather than having I'm gonna duct tape this baby block to the iPhone, and now I have a rudimentary hammer to tamp down and stick with, you know, bubble gum...
That's logical.
Make a lockpick. You know, it's not like that, but you'll have like a...
Oh, then you didn't get the best ending, puzzle. Sir, if you didn't do that.
the big puzzle in the episode is actually you get put in a situation where you have to stealthily take out like six zombies. And you have to manipulate the environment to take all of them out without any of them noticing you taking them out. And cool. So that's that would be an example of a puzzle in that game. Because the rest of it is... You know, it's a lot. There's a lot of like, you know, talking heads. You'll get dialogue. There are times you'll get like attacked by a zombie, and you have to like mash the button or something. But the interesting thing is they have a cursor on the screen because I play it on the Xbox, and you move it around with the right stick, and it's basically like your mouse cursor. But it does a lot of the same stuff that Heavy Rain did when you're in a stressful situation, like a zombie's grabbing you and you're trying to kick at its face. You have to aim at it with the stick, but it'll kind of be bouncing around or pushed off to the side, and you have to kind of like zero it in and find where the actual hotspot to click is. And it's a simple interaction, but it's really stressful some of the time, because you're like, oh crap. I died, and oddly, another thing that's amusing is that the deaths are actually quite violent. I had an instance where I died, and a zombie reached in and yanked my intestine out and started, chomping on it. It's like, you don't expect that out of a Telltale game.
Yeah, but it's a little different from Sam and Max.
Yeah, they do, but I think they do a really good job with it. If you're a fan of the comic, there's some... I would hesitate to say fan service, but there's some character,
not the TV show.
It exists in the same universe as the comic, and apparently it's canon, which is cool.
I think the biggest thing with it, like in terms of, you know, saying how they convey the stress of the situation, they've done a really good job with the camera in general, not only just like angles and stuff, but like there'll be times when you kind of get dazed and stuff, and so things are kind of blurry and you're trying to focus.
Yeah.
And figure out where to focus on things and stuff like that. That really, I thought, did an excellent job.
And I think they did a really good job with the main character. And there's actually a pretty interesting story reveal in the
first
episode.
You mean the Hulu guy?
Hulu guy?
That is. The guy who does the voice of the main character is, whenever you go and watch something on Hulu, he's like, "The following program is brought to you with limited paid commercial interruption by..."
I heard someone on Twitter describe that particular voice as a date rapist jazz musician. get that out of my head. But I actually don't watch anything on Hulu, I didn't recognize it.
So now I have to ask, are you guys playing with the sort of decision beats on where it will tell you that you... that person will know that choice, or are you taking those off?
It doesn't. I kept it on, and I don't think it really mattered.
It didn't change
because it doesn't tell you anything before. It tells you after it happens.
Yeah, after you make. That's what I mean.
So it'll be like you'll be like you have the opportunity to lie to somebody, and when you lie, it'll say they're going to remember that you said that, and that's all.
I know, but
it's not like you can
pop
back and change it.
Yeah.
No, but if I play that game, I want to have that all off and just let it go cold.
So that's how I did it. That's how I did it. I mean, there's some decisions that you come across in the game that are obviously decision choice marks, like whether or not you have it flagged. But I played the whole entire game with don't highlight anything in the environment, don't tell me about decisions, and just played the game through. And, I'm going to put up my whole thoughts. Probably by the time this is up, the Beyond Co-op review will go up in our user blog section. But it was, for me, the most natural flowing game I've played with dialogue. Like, I felt a lot of the dialogue options, they kind of covered the different areas, but they felt like general, genuine responses someone would actually give in these kinds of situations. Like, the characters didn't feel forced into certain choices like you sometimes feel in the Mass Effect games, where you're suddenly like, I'm going to be a nice dude, or I'm just going to kick this puppy for no reason. I mean,
pet the kitten, kick the kitten.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the dialogue choices are kind of just the things that you expect someone who's being, thrown into the situation would say. And, if someone starts asking you about your past or something like that, you might be standoffish. So the standoffish response is kind of like, mind your business. It's not like, I'm going to shoot you in the face now.
It's not black or white.
I actually liked that not saying anything is actually a valid option in basically every dialogue. Like, someone can ask you a question, you can just stare them down.
That is the entirely, like, I want to do an entire playthrough in that way and just, like, say nothing.
Just don't even touch the controller. Put it down and wait.
I think the coolest thing that they added to it at the very end is that it gives you a Catherine style summary.
Oh, I love that.
So it'll say like, here's the four or five main plot divergence points, and it plots you.
Cool.
Like 50% of users did this, and you chose this as well as somebody. And apparently, I am in the minority of who I
saved
of who I saved.
Me too. I was kind
a
of,
large decision.
Yeah, I would. You know, I didn't want to spoil anything, but I was kind of thinking something else would have happened, and maybe both of them got saved if I did the one decision, which is why I did it. And I was like, oh well.
I did the one because one of the someone was very. Let's just say they threatened me in a very passive aggressive way. So I let nature take its course.
You guys are terrible.
Yes.
There's nothing natural about zombies, sir.
Right.
Yeah,
except
whatever.
That they're just there.
But it's a solid game, and I really do suggest anyone has A, if you like The Walking Dead, you're gonna like it, I feel, and B, if you like adventure games, it's one of the best in a long time.
So the only nice caveat I have to this is I'm hopeful that it continues with how it's been, and it has every indication of doing so. But some of their games, it's definitely been the case that episode one came out and it was fantastic.
Strong out of the gate.
And episode two was kind of, I mean, like, that's how I felt about the Back to the Future games. Like,
it's the
I
episode
really
three
enjoyed
fatigue. Yeah. So you get to the third one and you stop caring.
Or yeah, the J.J. exactly. Abrams season fatigue. Episode one's amazing. Episode two's all right. Episode three, you're like, what? Yeah.
Nice. Anything else to add, Nick?
No, I think we pretty well covered that.
Nice. Well, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to playing some Walking Dead. I'm a big fan of the show. I haven't read the comics, though, so...
Much better than the show.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah.
That's what I hear, but okay, cool.
What have you been playing?
Me? You know what? Been taking one for the team with this dinosaur game.
I mean, you're beating down on dinos. That's got to be exciting.
Okay. Wait, were you perhaps playing Dino Wars for the NES?
I wish I was playing Dino Wars. You know, I've been playing Orion Dino Beatdown, which is a budget, and I mean budget, DC title.
What was the budget? 25 cents?
No, it's like, I think it's $9.99 on Steam, and
so we talking you know Cabela's big game hunter budget, or are we talking
no not even that
no?
Man, I'm like I'm
so it's more like it's more like Fugitive Hunter budget.
Yeah,
it's excellent. Like Future
so there's
Wars.
Gonna be an awesome rap song at the end of the game.
I hope so, because that will be the best thing about this game.
It's Future Wars
really,
budget where they throw cardboard boxes at each other.
Yeah, box fighting.
I was really excited to get some sort of Dino Riders thing going on, because that was a wicked show.
It was.
When you get
I had
to
the toys.
Combine, when you get to combine, you know, futuristic soldiers with dinosaurs that attack you, you get Dino Riders. Or so I thought, but no. This game plays like it's a horde mode, and that's all it is. It's really just waves and waves of dinosaurs coming at you, and you can, it's a class, well,
I don't find anything wrong with anything you've said thus far.
Okay, well, let's just wait. it would be good if this came out in, like, 97, because it, like, feels like a Half-Life mod, which I'm sure it is a Source mod, but, yeah, it's just, they only have, like, three types of dinosaurs, and, like I said, they call it a class-based shooter.
And one of them is a brontosaurus.
And that doesn't even exist!
Yeah. If they had velociraptors with lasers on their heads, then we'd be talking.
Clever girl.
No, they only have these little ones that aren't even raptors. I forget what the little guys are called, but they run around.
The compies,
but then... The only other thing is pterodactyls and T-Rexes, and
that's a huge scale jump.
Yeah,
there from
so an itty bitty dinosaur and then a T-Rex and a pterodactyl.
It's like, and it's not even a rock paper scissors thing. It's just go, just waves. Here's 100 dinosaurs that come at you. And you start out with
spin it lock. This is delightfully old school because the game does not hold your hand.
But, no, it's not good.
Can you climb on a T-Rex's back and jump onto a pterodactyl?
No, because that would be infinitely better than anything here. What you end up doing is running backwards, shooting your pistol, because you need to shoot enough dinosaurs to gain enough magic money so you can buy additional weapons. But then they have objectives.
Who are you paying this money to?
Is it actually called magic money?
Well, Okay, how, it does not make sense to me how dinosaurs, by killing dinosaurs, you get money. Like,
is there a weapon fence stegosaurus that's selling you items?
Yo, you know,
I wish. Like I said, these are all very good ideas.
Look.
Is the diaper-wearing monkey from Metal Gear Solid 4 in this game?
No, you just go up to the tower and you put your money in and it shoots guns out at you.
What tower?
Like, there's just rant. There's like three or four different maps, and you start at one like base, and dinosaurs rush in, and you have to kill them all and do these objectives like power up this generator by holding E on it for 10 seconds, and of course you just wait until the very last dinosaur, and then you just go do all the objectives. Then you can move over to the next area, and there's, you know, they have vehicles scattered throughout, and I managed to play a game with like four other people.
Whoa.
It supports up to five. Yeah, surprising, but apparently it's big in Europe right now. But seriously, the last wave, we just ended up getting in the like VTOL, not VTOL jets.
We killed
like
Nick.
Everybody
knows German Tate dinosaurs.
Yeah, there's.
It's going on the back of the box. List. Orion Dino Beatdown. It's big in Europe.
Oh, I wish I could say good things, because on the, you know, superficially this should be amazing, but it really, really plays bad. Like, you just run around and shoot dinosaurs in the face badly. Like, it's a bad shooter.
Are you playing as Hitler?
No, you're playing as generic space marine.
Because
guy.
Der Fuhrer hates dinosaurs.
Yeah, well, put that on the box too. But,
so it's not like Earth Defense Force where, you know, they have bugs that they call aliens and the...
Well, you see, the thing about Earth Defense Force is
It's awesome?
Yeah, well, but there's a specific reason why it's awesome.
It's a campy B-movie, whereas this is like, it could have been that, and it could have had that feeling, and it falls really short on the sort of mechanical side of things.
This is more like a sci-fi original gone horribly wrong.
This is something, I would not be surprised if this appeared in Mystery Science Theater 3000. Like, I wish it was good, but it just did not. It just needed some time in the back in the oven. Here's one scenario. Here's a good example. I'm running backwards. I finally make it to the Stegosaurus who sells weapons. And then...
Wait, there's a Stegosaurus that sells weapons?
No, I knew it!
No, I make it into a building, and I shoot a couple campies. I go to buy my weapon, and all of a sudden, this T-Rex head clips through the damn wall, and...
They had that power, sir.
That is not... dinosaur cannon, seriously. You gotta get it straight. The only dinosaurs that were able to clip through walls were I don't think those existed. But I'm no paleontologist, but
so Locke,
I don't think they existed.
Locke, do you rate it a 3DS in the CirclePad Pro on the 3DS stand out of 5?
No, I rate it a duct tape block on your iPhone out of 2. We've spent far too long discussing this game.
We have to give it its coverage.
That's right.
You will see my coverage on Friday when the review hits, and right. It's going to be awesome.
I can't wait.
Your coverage should just be.
You are informing my purchasing decision with your review log.
I think for the video review, we might need to do some like MS Paint style graphical overlays of like the Stegosaurus selling weapons.
Dude,
we just do a screenshot
rolling
what
up
would
in
make
a
this game
mobile,
better.
Throwing down the honeys.
You say these things now, but it's at the end of the day, it's your editorial content going up there, so. You have to flex your muscle to say whether you want this on your...
Nick just wants to troll PR.
Well, that's the thing. I don't want to be a dick and just be like, this game's fucking stupid. Because it's not.
Because it's big in Europe, so...
Someone is really... Someone out there is really getting this game and digging it and has made it through... every wave, but it just falls short on so many levels, and there's so many other things out there to play.
And his name is Hans Düsseldorf from Schweinedier, Germany.
Like, yeah, I would love to be able to recommend this game, but I just can't. So, and The only other thing I've been playing is L.A. Noire. So far, so good. It's an old game.
Is this your
speaking
first time
of adventure games?
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of adventure games, this one doesn't have zombies, but once
just
you...
Wait. Doesn't once, it? Just wait for the fourth
Have
act.
You looked at some of those faces?
Okay. Well, that's true. No, it's cool. I'm really enjoying it. I like the style. I knew what I was expecting going in, and it's really fun.
I just like that half the cast of Mad Men's in that game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Why not?
And right? They only had to beat, like, 20 Australians to get it made, so that makes you feel
I know, and then they fired them. Yes. So that's too bad. But, no, once you kind of get the feeling of what you're supposed to be doing with the interrogations and questioning and stuff, it's really good. And I made it to Homicide so far, so I'm going to go solve some more crimes, working my way up that ladder. Quickly, Jason, Witcher 2.
Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't play this, obviously, the first time around, but I recently upgraded my PC and wrote about the new gaming keyboard mouse that Rocket sent out. And it's the enhanced edition, so it's got, you know, some of the tweaks done to it. Mike told me when I started enhancing all my PC and stuff like that, he's like, Witcher 2. I was like, what? He's like, you gotta play Witcher 2. Witcher 2. Are you playing Witcher 2 yet? Because
you'd be a fool not to.
It is one of the most beautiful games I think I've seen, and particularly now I just recently upgraded my monitor too, and
it is
absolutely gorgeous, the environments they have in there, and I'm really enjoying the story of it too. I mean, it's probably one of the more just kind of, I feel, realistic RPGs, like set in the fantasy world, like the characters kind of interact more like you'd expect people to interact, as opposed to this whole high loftiness and honor and all this other kind of stuff. Feels a little bit more down the dirt with things, which I like. So it's been good,
especially combat, with Triss.
Yeah, the combat system is
get down in the dirt. You know.
Yeah, and the prostitutes, but the combat system is one of those elements where I'm glad actually that I have this particular gaming keyboard and mouse, because being able to do some hot function keys with the way that the mapping works has really saved me in combat, because I can't imagine having to like scramble all over the keyboard to try and find the different signs and sigils and stuff like that to cast. So
you can put in like macros on the hotkeys, right?
Yeah, you can put in macros. You can, like, you know, I have a set basically where when I switch the keys, all the buttons on my mouse cast the different signs, so I can just do those quickly from one spot.
Oh, nice.
And still move around, so that works.
I didn't have a problem with it when I played it, so
let's go.
Yeah, but everyone, you're the best at games ever, Mike.
Yeah, everyone knows this.
It's a radial menu. I don't. And, okay.
See, but I don't like radial menus. I don't know. It's just me. I don't know. Anyway, so I like being able to just go on the fly and just keep it going. So, but it's been good.
And did you play the first one?
I played just a little bit. I didn't play it all the way through. So, I mean, like, where it picks up in the story and everything, I just have whatever comes into the game. So I'm pretty much, you know, I knew that I played, like, an hour into the first game, so I knew enough about who Geralt was and that he was the Witcher and that much of it, but I didn't play through any of the rest to see what happened to him after he went in and killed some ghosts or something. I don't know.
The coolest, one of the coolest things about The Witcher 2 is if you played the first game and you had an end game save lying around, when you start The Witcher 2, you have all of your gear from The Witcher 1.
Oh, cool.
Equipped. And it has all the same item names and everything. And sweet. Of course you replace it almost instantly, because you know, they have to give you something to shoot for. But it was a really nice touch. You get a little bit of a boost at the beginning.
Nice. And the beginning's tough, isn't it? Like,
it, you know, it's one of those games where it's tough until you kind of learn the ins and outs of the combat, and it's very, like, there's no tutorial that, and especially because I played it when it first came out, that the help screen is about five lines of text, and it disappears. There was a bug that made it disappear right away.
Read was just like, don't die?
Well, the first thing I read was, left stick, or left, you know, WASD and the left stick, because it has controller support.
Right.
You know, moves your character, and then it just disappeared, and I could never bring it back up. So
Good luck.
I was like, all right, Witcher 2, I got this.
Nice.
And, you know, they did, I had heard a few cautionary tales about how difficult the beginning of the game is. It's you know, it's not really that hard. It's just you can't go into it expecting to slice through everybody right away. You have to be very methodical from the beginning.
Yeah.
And once you've leveled up about a quarter of the way, you become almost absurdly overpowered and can just smoke everything throughout the entire rest of the game.
As a Witcher should.
Yeah, but it is, so it's like the first, I'd say the first 5 or 6 hours the combat was difficult, and then especially if you take the upgrade path that I did, you essentially become invincible, and I actually had to bump the difficulty to hard before I started taking damage again.
Okay.
So, it's fun though, but like I'm playing it for the story. I'd play it for the story.
Just like you read it for the articles.
I do. Well, I play it for the story because if you go the right way in the story, you can have sex with everyone.
Great. You know,
like, the original Witcher, you could bone like 14 different characters, and I made it. And
why not?
They
right?
were my. That was my Pokemon card collection.
Okay, gotcha.
My wife would be sitting there, you know, behind me and say, "Hey,
STDs.
Check this out. Look what I'm about to do." And I hit the button that triggers the sex scene. Like, that's right.
Yeah.
The Witcher's getting some. And then I got my Pokemon card.
And then you didn't get some from your wife. Excellent.
You know what?
No, not for
you
a while.
Know what? The Witcher 2, also big in Europe.
I can verify this.
Apparently so is Geralt.
A little more, a little less, less dinosaurs, a little more competence.
That's right.
Cool. Well, I think that that does it for the games we've been playing for the last little while. I know it's been a little longer than 2 weeks, but let's move on to the news and headlines. And this is a very interesting article about Diablo 3 coming out in tomorrow.
coming out and servers are going online as we speak.
Yeah exactly. It has a starter edition. And that's gonna go as soon as the game launches, which basically allows you to sample the game. Now, that's pretty sweet, because if you are someone who's on the fence and you maybe you have a friend saying, hey, come play with us, come pick this up, you can go through the first act up with a character up to a max level of 13.
It's basically the beta content.
Yeah, so they're putting out the beta out there, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. You can matchmake, which is great. But I don't think you can use the auction house.
You can't actually use the starter edition for the first 30 days without a key from someone who bought the game.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's you can either wait 30 days and get your free demo, or you can go hop on and play with your friends, which is
right.
What they're encouraging. And right. every box copy of Diablo 3 comes with like 3 or 4 guest passes. So
yeah. So a genius recruiting strategy by Blizzard. So, you know, you have someone who has bought the game, you know, you get them who they're probably an evangelist for the game anyways, get them to dole it out to people who, you know, maybe haven't bought it. And there you go. There's, you know, I would definitely, they're definitely going to see a return on investment on this because it costs them zero.
I just want them
Block
to go
has
back
a spreadsheet
to the
pulled up somewhere for his ROI calculations.
Yeah, exactly.
Blizzard.
Oh.
Yes.
I just want them to go back to Diablo 1 and let you install a spawn copy of the game for, you know, it's like, you know, here's my disc. You get a demo version. 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 We'll all play co-op.
Exactly. Do you guys, I got Torchlight 2 beta kicks off. Any, we kind of talked about that. Anything else that people should know?
That Torchlight 2 is, even if you're going to play a ton of Diablo 3, you would be remiss to pass up Torchlight 2. It offers just enough different to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
I think too, what's interesting with, in relation to like Diablo is like, it seems that they're going to have a full, like kind of online system where your character is stored online and everything and stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice.
So that's pretty cool.
And you can go like check out the like what you have equipped and stuff.
Well, I don't know if there's a could be like a web portal or something like that, but I just mean like your character, like if you would log in from somewhere else, you'd have access to that character.
Oh, right, sweet.
You know, so that's kind of a cool bonus.
Well, that and starting a co-op game in Torchlight 2 is kind of like going on Battle.net for Diablo 2, and you can actually just search through all the open games and just pop in right off the bat, which is they do a really good job facilitating co-op. The thing I really enjoyed about Torchlight 2, and coming from playing an awful lot of Torchlight 1, is they actually made it difficult. Because Torchlight 1 was too easy. That was the reason I never actually beat the game, is because you are stomping through. If you pick a normal difficulty in Torchlight 1, you are just stomping that game all the way through, and it gets really boring.
Yeah.
After a while, so knowing that about Torchlight 1, I started Torchlight 2, and I said, "All right, hard. You know, give me a challenge." And you know, it's pretty stiff. They do a really good job at giving you options other than health potions to heal yourself, but it's, you know, you definitely get put in tough spots pretty quickly, because you're not going to have like a 500 potions floating around like you did in the first Torchlight.
Yeah, and everything has the cooldown on the potions, and the difficulty's definitely been ramped up, and kind of as I was saying earlier, for anyone who's a fan of Diablo 2 and feels like more games should be like Diablo 2, Torchlight 2 definitely feels like that same vein, with the way they have a lot of the system set up to it.
And something I actually really appreciate about the game is that it runs at 60 frames a second. You know, and that's really important in a game where there's a ton of stuff flying everywhere. And you know, Diablo 3 ran at about 60 frames a second on my machine as well, but there's a smoothness to Torchlight that Diablo doesn't have. Like it's just like liquid.
Well, nice. Yeah, and that probably large part of that comes from their art style that they use and the way that they...
The zero system requirement engine that they use.
Yeah.
Well, I remember the first game, one of the things they always shoot off with it was that it could run on like a netbook. Like that.
Yeah.
They were really trying to do that, so...
Torchlight for iPad. Make it happen.
I don't see why they couldn't do it,
I
honestly.
Wouldn't be surprised.
It'd be awesome. Especially if you could work on your character... You know, just if they have that central server of characters and cloud save it, that'd be really cool. Okay, so we covered Diablo a bit, we covered Torchlight 2 a bit. Let's go to super indie action RPG, Grim Dawn.
Yes,
it made its goal. Titan Quest. Yes, Crate Entertainment. They've got their goal. Actually, surpassed their goal of 280,000 on their Kickstarter,
and still has a few days left, I believe.
Yeah, they got about 4 days to go. They're probably going to go over 400 grand, which is awesome, because I'm sure I can speak for everyone here. Titan Quest was awesome, and that was a really, really fun game. They did some...
I spent cool that entire things. Game dressed as Santa Claus.
I really enjoyed Titan Quest because it you could like swap, do your different skills and, you know, combine two skill trees, and that would make you, you know, a certain type of character, which I thought was really neat. And of course, you know, Greek and Roman mythology is always fun.
Yeah, I like the setting of it. I like as a change of pace from a lot of other ones, the setting made that game for me a whole lot more than I see for others. Which is the only thing with Grim Dawn that I'm kind of curious to see what happens with that, since it seems a little bit more generic for the RPG.
Yeah, it seems fantasy based. I see a little bit of steampunk happening, but one of the unique things about Grim Dawn is that they want your decisions in quests to have an effect on the world. And by doing that, they're going to have these different factions. So if you, you know, decide to work for this faction or make a favorable decision for them, it's going to affect your relationship with another, which, you know, we've seen that before, but not in this type of game. And again, another thing they want to do is let you kind of go around in the world to different unlockable areas in whatever order you want. So a non-linear sort of story.
Yeah, they call it an open world action RPG, and it's not, I don't think it's going to be quite open world, but it's pretty sweet. And I think it's kind of like how, and I didn't play a whole lot of it, but Dungeon Siege 3 was pretty wide open from the beginning. There's plenty of places you could actually go.
You know, not open world in the purest sense, but still giving you some choice on how you want to approach, you know, the next set of missions.
I played so much Titan Quest. I'm giving this game a complete pass, and, you know, I really want to play it.
One interesting...
You can still,
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, no, I was just going to say, there's still one spot, Mike, for pledging $8,000 or more.
The interesting thing about their reward tiers is they have co-op rewards. So basically, you pledge a certain amount, you not only get one copy of the game, you get two for co-op, as well as like some of the digital items in the game. They'll give you two copies of it. So that's pretty cool that they're focusing the reward tiers on the co-op play.
And they did the Kickstarter right. I mean, the game was going to come out regardless. They're just helping accelerate its release.
Yeah. Yeah, because we've been covering this for a good 2 or 3 years now. We've had it in our database and been seeing stuff on it. And so, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, go out there. You got hopefully a couple days by the time you hear this to check this Grim Dawn out. Really looking forward to that.
Have you Kickstarted it at all?
I got the swashbuckler bundle.
It was interesting when I saw that story go up, and I was one of the people who took a look at it, because I went, and when it first was announced back in, 2009, I think it was the first time, 2010.
Yeah, it was a while back.
When they first announced this whole thing, I put money in right then for access to it, so...
And that was just off their site, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was back when I was just kind of like, you're throwing money at this and praying that they're able to get enough money, so...
Yeah, yeah. They had, like, a couple gameplay sort of pictures, and that was it. And just descriptions of the game, and you're going based on their name alone. And you know what? You know, Titan Quest alone, like you said, Mike, is more than enough reason to support this.
Yeah, so. And just I don't think an action RPG has gotten a class system as right as Titan Quest did.
Yes.
You know, there's 12 base classes, and you could dual class everything. So you could be a rogue elementalist, you know, run around with like flaming weapons and poison. And it's just got like super ridiculous.
Yeah, but it was cool because it actually, when you dual classed, it had a separate name for that, which was, it was nice. You're not, I forget what.
I think there were 64 classes in that game all told.
Yeah.
Which is freaking crazy.
Yeah.
Cool. Next up, we have some Lego. Lego Lord of the Rings, mind you. Possibly going to be coming out here. So there's been, 3,000 Lego games that have done fairly well.
Yes, but very few have been able to set themselves up for an epic Legolas joke.
Oh, zing. Throwing it up there, slamming it down. No, it's not, you know, they haven't confirmed it, but it's out there that it's kind of been leaked that this is going to be happening.
That joke is only big in Sweden, and that's the only place that place flies.
But
come on, no one made it.
You know what? The Lord of the Rings, maybe, you know, having that many characters, it lends itself straight to co-op. Like, every single battle and every single part in that game has co-op. Even Sam, if only one part is Sam carrying Frodo, that's co-op. So you gotta.
So one
have
person
that.
Just sits there with the controller and like wiggles the sticks to like flail
They're
the limbs.
They're just like trying to beat his back, like let me down, put me down. Yeah,
exactly. So no, I the Lego games aren't my favorite, but I can appreciate what they do, and they're very cute, and they're very well done, and
they are.
Yeah, again. I just really hope that it has online co-op because it's tough to get my dog to play with me.
He
just shorts out the controllers with the drool and.
Well, I don't have kids like you guys. You can be like, hey, we're playing Legos now. Let's go. Sweet. Next up, we have Serious Sam. Who played Serious Sam? I can't remember who reviewed
Mike.
That. Was that you?
That was me.
Mike did. Nick, yeah. This is they're gonna take it to the old twin stick shooters here and let the Xbox boys play it. How do you guys feel about that?
Fine. I mean, the PC version shipped with Xbox controller support.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, I mean, as long as it can run on the system, I don't see any reason for it not.
Apparently,
to be
that's like the problem that they're having with the port is getting it to run.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, getting that. Well, it's a really, really pretty game. I mean,
it is a really pretty game, but the other thing is, so they have a really pretty high quality lighting engine, and that game is throwing Like,
well, there's tons.
By
of
the
stuff.
End of that game, you are literally fighting like 500 dudes on the screen at the same time.
Nice.
So, and, I can imagine that the early on the Xbox would have no problem, but late, you know, towards the end of that game, it's just going to be ridiculous. So they probably have to rebalance it and redo some of those character models.
Optimize it for the platform, and then they say they may move on to a PS3 port, but that's going to take even more work. But no, that's great. It, you know, Serious Sam, great series, and BFE. And
the co-op is really good.
There's like what's it up to? 4 or
16.
8? Holy crap!
16 players simultaneous. And when I was when I was reviewing it, I did a full run through of the game from start to finish with 16 players.
That's perfect.
Yes.
That's awesome.
It was excellent.
When you can get that going for a co-op review, like that, you couldn't ask for more. Just being, I played this game in the perfect co-op state.
We can finally have a co-optimist staff night. It's amazing.
Yeah.
A game that holds enough players. Nice.
And isn't Burnout Paradise.
That's right.
Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but... last but not least, before we move on to our discussion, Raccoon City sells 2 million copies, but failed financially. Discuss.
Raccoon City sold a lot of copies based on the strength of the Resident Evil name, but not quite enough.
Like,
you gotta wonder what's going on over there.
Like, what did they spend it on?
Big American salaries.
I guess. But, like, when we did the review, I think Andrew did the review.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, he did not have great things to say about it, like everyone else on the internet did. But, everyone agreed, you know, that this game was kind of crap. But, you know, Mike, it totally sold on its name.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that there's games out there that would love to sell 2 million copies. And we'll never sell 2 million copies.
Like Asura's Wrath.
Yeah, totally. But that's another Capcom game. Like, that some priorities aren't right there when you're pushing 2 million copies. Like, it's just too bad, because what does a Resident Evil title need to be a success? Like, 3, 4, 5, 6 million? Like,
mm-hmm.
I like Resident Evil as much as the next guy, but, like, it's not... I don't see it as one of those giant multi-million, million.
It just
Halo
has to
killers.
Be in a case like that, you know, poor management over the years, too long development cycle, you know, they basically, you know, farm that out to another studio too. So they're outsourcing it. So they're paying more for the work and stuff done.
Yeah.
We'll see. Maybe everyone just bought it for the Resident Evil 6 trailer. I don't know.
That'd be sad.
Yeah.
Just like everyone's going to buy Dragon's Dogma to get the demo.
What's on the Dragon... What's the demo? Oh, for Resident Evil 6?
Isn't the Resident Evil 6 demo coming with that game?
I think so, yeah.
It's like everyone bought Crackdown for the Halo 3 beta. And then they were pleasantly surprised because Crackdown turned out to be awesome. I know plenty of people who bought that game purely so they could play Halo 3.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me, because I would gladly play Crackdown over Halo 3.
Well, you know that now, but you didn't know that then when it first came out.
I know. Oh, well. That wraps up our articles for the week. But let's we got about 10 minutes here to delve into the rise, or as we title it, the re-rise of the action RPG. You know, we've talked about Grim Dawn, Torchlight 2, Diablo 3, even Titan Quest.
Mm-hmm.
Mark has done an amazing retrospective on the Diablo series up until now. He covers all the intricacies of the first two games, plus their expansions.
Yeah.
You can check that out on the site. But really, this is a... What makes this genre so special?
For me, it's just building that perfect character. We've talked about this on the podcast before. It's, you know, you get basically a blank slate. You fill it with skills, and then you fill it with loot, and you min-max the hell out of it and make, you know, the most efficient, cool-looking murder machine imaginable.
Now, are you the type of person who goes into this being like, okay, I need the perfect build. I don't want to screw up one skill point. Or do you just kind of like experiment with stuff until you kind of figure out what you like?
I try and experiment. When I played something like World of Warcraft, I was definitely like, you know, find the one true spec and maximize it, because, you know, in a game like that, your success can be, you know, in a group is kind of gauged on your ability. So you kind of want to stack the deck in your favor at all times.
Totally.
I guess the reason I titled the topic this is that, you know, the last time there was a big renaissance in action RPGs was basically when Diablo II came out. There were games like, what was it, Nox, and a bunch of other clones that came out at the time. And, you know, people started, like, there started being loot in a lot of D&D type stuff, you know, in, you know, Baldur's Gate, Dark Alliance, and games like that. Went from more of a CRPG background and started, you know, leaning way towards the model that Diablo set up.
Right.
So there was a big period when Diablo 2 came out where that genre, you know, had a big, you know, renaissance, and then it just kind of went away for a while. And every now and then you'd get, there was one called, was it Fate? It came out a couple years back. And that became, oh man, I needed it.
Are you talking about a Diablo clone?
Yeah. It was the game that, okay, you remember Flagship, who did Hellgate London? They had a second game, Mythos.
Yeah.
Mythos is, I believe, if I'm remembering my history, Mythos is what eventually became Torchlight.
Yeah.
Is a lot of the developers that were developing Mythos were, you know, when Flagship went under, they're building this cartoony, you know, action RPG, and Flagship went under, and the Mythos license actually got shipped off to Korea, and, you know, all those guys up in Seattle said, but our game, so they reformed as Runic and made Torchlight, but, you know, there was Titan Quest a few years ago, but now that and then Torchlight, and then Diablo.
Sacred.
Yeah.
Well, Sacred.
Sacred wasn't too bad.
Sacred 2. But
Dungeon Seas a little bit.
But. Yeah. But now you have Diablo 3, and again around Diablo 3 you have, you know, you have Torchlight 2, you have Grim Dawn, and
there's another one too. At the disc around here. There's another big one that's coming out, and it's actually hold on.
Is it an indie game, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, it's a smaller studio that's working on it.
So, real quick, Mike, you're right. The Fate was done by one of the founders of Runic Games.
Okay.
And so he did Fate, which had a lot of the similar elements that Torchlight had. So, yeah, when they transferred over.
Is it Path to Exile?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, totally called it.
Yeah.
that looks super gritty, too. I saw a guy... Like I talked to the developer for that at PAX, and it's just like super dark, like even more so than Diablo, you know. But I grew up playing Diablo. I remember looking in a magazine and seeing it, and then my friend brought it over and we installed it and we played it for. It was an all-nighter for sure, and then it's just been the sort of template, like you said, Mike, for all these other games, but. I don't know what it is. I think it's the addictive nature of, just getting that next piece of loot.
It's constant positive reinforcement
totally,
for your
totally,
actions. You're in these games, you're almost always, you know, even though, you know, okay, you play normal mode Diablo 2, it's pretty easy. And then you can step up through the difficulties and make it just a completely balls hard game. But, you know, it has this perfect balance of risk versus reward. You play it on easy mode, the only, like, you'll get good loot, but the only good loot's only going to come from the hard bosses, and then you step up into, like, Nightmare and Hell, and even the little scrub, you know, named enemies are going to start giving you cool shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the time, you know, you're running through the game again, you are completely leveled up from your prior playthrough, and you're going through the low-level area with harder enemies, but you have all the end game abilities at this point. So it's just, you're like, wow, this would normally be a slog, but I can slaughter everything with the wave of my hand.
In Diablo 3.
A lot of these games really give you a real positive reinforcement. It's, you know, Torchlight is great. One of the things that I really love that they did is when you get a critical hit, the whole screen shakes. It's just like, you know, I'm level one, but I'm fucking badass. And right. Look at all the loot that just poured out of that guy. I'm gonna put that on.
And strut around town.
And I like the
his pants fell off. I'm putting them right on.
I like Torchlight's fame system too for like killing like nice the bigger mechanic, guys and
yeah.
stuff. And...
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You totally. One of my favorite changes that came with Diablo 2 was when you put something on, it actually made your character look different. Mm-hmm. Which I was just like, what? You mean this bone helmet is actually a skull on my head? Like I felt so awesome.
Yeah,
and
there's that dress up element to it that I mean I won't lie, like I was looking through I was looking through the Diablo 3 site today and all the different armor and weapons and stuff like that they have, and I'm just like, oh, I can't wait to see that in game. I can't wait to see my character in that. There is definitely that.
Do you think
there's
gonna be a fashion show DLC?
Of course, they have an entire component of the website that allows you to show your characters off, similar to the armory that
you know how big
WoW.
Fashion show DLC is in Europe. Nick? It's huge. It's huge. So no, I don't know. It's gonna be so good. What do you guys think of hardcore mode?
I think it's something that I'll do every now and then, but I will not. I'm not going to put any serious time investment into it because I can't have my character get deleted in front of me like that. It's too much negative. Not logging into Diablo 2 and having your and coming back and having your character deleted is bad enough, but it's like, you know, you get a lag spike and you didn't mash the potion in time and you die and then you lost your character. It's like I can't do that. It's a lot of it's because it's online, and you know there's going to be the lag equation.
Yeah, true.
It's like you know, if my internet connection dies, my hardcore character is certainly going with it.
Well, and per what we've been discussing here, the risk reward thing is, I mean, hardcore really the only reward it carries with it is kind of bragging rights, right? It's EPing status, and does it really matter if you know?
Yeah.
Beyond like. A few friends like, yeah, I got a hardcore character that's level 60. It's like, big whoop. I mean, I'd rather go through and play the game a bunch of times and not care about...
Have
you know,
different characters, yeah. I just feel... I think the feeling of tension... I think you almost need it. You need hardcore to get that tension because when I play Diablo, you go in and I'm not afraid of dying.
But it's,
it doesn't matter.
It's like I like permadeath in certain games. Like I love roguelikes. Like I love like, you know, just dungeon crawly stuff. I love
But they're totally built around starting over multiple times.
But that's the thing. Diablo, because it's story based, that doesn't work. You don't want to go through Act 1 10 times in succession because you died on the boss.
Right. No, I would say that you'd play hardcore after you'd gone through the story.
Right, but again, because it's got all the story and all the quests are linear, you know, they're laid out in succession, you are literally just replaying the game several times, and it doesn't work for me. It's like if the game was more free, like Dark Souls, I think Dark Souls does a really good job of it. There is a story there, but it's so sparse.
Yeah.
That it doesn't, it's not in the way. Diablo 3, you are literally assaulted with story the entire time, and I can tell you that that's going to get way old. In Diablo 2, it got way old.
I tell you, the only way I really see running hardcore is in a 4-player co-op group. That's the only way I can see running hardcore, because that, to me...
One.
Makes the most sense of out of every no yeah yeah no like I would
I
love
count
to,
four dudes right
I would
here
love to do
it.
I'd love to do that.
It would make an awesome
why?
Like LAN party.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
It's I, that yeah. kind of like almost Dungeons and Dragons feel to the game where you're there and it's that whole
dude.
You get that whole element and vibe going. That's the only instance I can really see doing hardcore, because then you're this group and one person dies, it adds to the realism of it and it's like they're gone. That's it.
I like that. I don't know. Maybe I need a harder drug than you, but I like that. I don't know. It's scary. Like, I know it's like when I lose my first hardcore character, I'm going to be irate.
I want you to live stream it. We're gonna.
No, I'm talking Co-Opticast 88. We're playing hardcore Diablo 3. Four of us going in,
and we'll see how long we can.
Let's do it.
Right here, one comes out.
Next episode, we're gonna live stream a 4-player hardcore run.
Uh huh.
Dude, what if we're really good?
It would make it all the way to
playing. We will do it. We will desert bust this shit. We are going 24 hours.
Dude, I will go this weekend.
You guys are getting crazy.
I can't promise that this weekend because my grandma's in town.
Yeah, no, I don't want to see any piss jugs.
Have grandma roll
like
a witch doctor. Come on.
Mikey! Check out my urine bag skills.
Unfortunately, my grandmother is not... She doesn't stand for the real money auction house or the persistent internet connection requirement. So she is boycotting Diablo 3.
She's one of those purists.
She regularly trolls the comments board on Rock, Paper, Shotgun.
Okay, last thing. What are you guys looking for in Diablo 3 to do differently? And I know, you know, we've all played the beta. What are you looking for it to do differently specifically? What one for me?
I think it's already done for me. And I think it's the, like, I went back and I replayed Diablo 2 a little bit because we talked about doing that for this podcast. And I got into it for about 5 minutes. And I was just like, yeah, I don't know if I can go back to this
anymore.
You
don't like only having one active skill up at a time and having to toggle between them with the function keys, so every spell is two clicks rather than one?
Yeah, just there's the way that they've streamlined things, and I wasn't such a fan at first, and you know, Mike and I had conversations about this, of, you know, like, oh yeah, but you had all those different skills, and you could sort of, you know, assign them to all the different key slots and everything, and I'd forgotten, because it'd been a while since I played it, and so I went back and I played it, and I was just like, no, actually, the streamline of abilities that they've done for Diablo 3, I know there's a lot of people who are probably going to hate it, but it's a very good system. I think it's, even going through and playing Torchlight 2, which I really enjoy, but having so many different abilities and everything that you're trying to level up and you're trying to figure out exactly which skill points to put into, I kind of like the rune system that they have better, and just like you choose a few different skills, you choose the runes to kind of switch them up,
complement them,
yeah, and that's what you go with,
and then you grow your character through the gear.
Yeah
Cool. How about you, Mike?
What I'm looking for out of Diablo 3, aside from another game that will last me 12 years, I want the same feeling out of Diablo 3 I used to get out of WoW, which is just the relentless, just like that relentless pursuit of perfection
and glory.
I guess, like, I'm really angry that the crafting system wasn't very well represented in the beta. You got the first few tiers of the blacksmith and that's it, but you didn't get gems or any of the other stuff, and you barely saw the rune system. And what I hope is that by the end of Diablo 3, maybe not so much different, but I'm hoping that it offers a new way in expanding your character alternatively. Like, by the end of Diablo 2, you know, if you play all the way through to, like, the end of Hell, you have, like, a level 80 character. You have all the unique stuff you wanted because you did all the farming. But, you know, where it really started setting itself apart is when you started using, like, the runes and the rune words.
Right.
And combining that with the gems and everything. And I think that Diablo 3 has a lot of potential to exploit the systems we've seen so far, like the runes and whatnot, and make that a pretty cool alternate way to advance your character. But, you know, it hasn't tipped its hand yet because, you know, the beta was only the first hour and a half of the game. Half that stuff wasn't even in it, so...
Some of the stuff I saw was that in terms of the crafting is if you want, like, unique items or some of the sets, you have to go through crafting, and what's more, you can only get them by basically playing on the harder levels, because as you go up in the difficulty, when you break stuff down into those components, you get different things on harder difficulty levels. So they're
crazy.
So they again, that reward system feedback that they have for you to actually go farther with it than just be like, that's it, I'm done. There's more, you know, for you to go through.
And the other thing, and this is something that I'm kind of angry that Blizzard did it. They put out an item database already ahead of the game. They had it in World of Warcraft. Like, you know, like, here's the items that drop from this boss, and here's all the set items and whatnot. And that's okay, because that's going to get spoiled for you in the world anyway. You're in a game with 10 million people, 8 million of them are assholes, and are going to spoil anything for everybody else. You know, it's like, oh, where'd you get that item? It's like, you know, you idiot, you should just look it up. And, you know, Blizzard tried to kind of circumvent that by releasing an item database already. But I think because I generally am only going to be playing this with friends, and I won't have a general chat there to ruin things for me. So I like to have I don't want to know. Yeah. Like, I don't want to know that at level 60 I can have access to this specific unique item for my character. I want to be surprised when it drops. But now that that website's there, I'm going to know that I can have that answer right there.
Be an adult, don't look at it.
I know, it's difficult.
And Nick, Diablo 3, what's it going to do for you?
The one thing I hope, and I know this was talked about like a long time ago, in terms of what they wanted to do with the game, was kind of expand it in smaller ways over time, kind of like what they do with, you know, with WoW and stuff, by adding more content to it, whether it's, you know, new items and stuff, or smaller quests and things like that. They said it was going to be, you know, a little more persistent and things like that. Like, there might be kind of like micro expansions and stuff like that. So I'm anxious to see if they do that and kind of keep it alive, and because those things keep the player base really strong. Not that, you know, I mean, Mike's been playing a lot of Diablo 2, and he said that, you know, the servers and stuff are still pretty busy. Whether that's because Diablo 3 is coming out right now and everybody wants to kind of get that fix or not, it's still 12 years later, and the fact that people are playing that game,
crazy.
Testament of just how strong it is. But, like, I know for me personally, and for a lot of people, like, you get to a point and you just don't want to touch it for, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 years, and then it's the nostalgia hits. And if they can keep content slowly kind of trickling in every, you know, 6 months or whatever to keep you coming back, it might be enough to keep it fresh.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I'm just really looking forward to not losing my job. So, well, I think
good luck
think
with
we'll
that.
Leave it at that. Yeah, I know. We'll leave it at that. Let's finish it off here, and just, guys, remember, grab our apps. We got it on the iOS. We got it on Windows Phone 7, Android. Get them, rate them, love them. We got a couple shirts left. Grab those. We got conventions coming up. I want to see your Co-Optimus shirts out representing. Grab those from the Split Reason store. Leave us feedback. Seriously, because why wouldn't you? We love patting each other on the back. Do that on iTunes. Do it wherever you can. Can you rate stuff on Windows Phone 7 yet?
I don't know. I think so.
Let's
I know see. You can on the phone itself. I don't know if you can through...
Yeah, just three... Just push your thumbs onto the 5-star thing. Just do that.
Or just track us down. Happy. If you're unhappy with something, throw your Windows Phone 7 at
totally.
Us. That's
totally.
A great piece of feedback right there.
And of course, follow us on Twitter. We're at Co-Optimus without the dash. And I would love to hear some voicemails next week. 646-926-6748. Call us. Leave us a message. We'll put it on the show. I promise I won't leave it out this time like I did last time. But give us your thoughts on Diablo, if you've been playing them, if you have any questions. If you know, min-max with Mike, I'm sure there's a sort of an editorial in there. He can take you through all the pro builds of all the classes. Or you can just go and play hardcore with Jason because he's crazy. And But we'd love to hear from you. But on behalf of myself and my co-hosts, this has been Co-Optimus 87. We love you. We're out.
Peace.